with Bruno Marion. Bruno is a French futurist. We're going to let him give us a little introduction about his background. Thank you very much for joining us, Bruno.
Thank you.
Tell us a little bit about yourself, your history.
My history. Well, maybe I can start like when I was 36. Before I had like a quite, I could say, regular life or normal life, if there is anything that is actually normal. I'm an engineer, I did an MBA, and I started to work for like almost 15 years. And when I was 36, at that time, I didn't have any kids. And when you're 36 and everybody around you have kids, so it's like every dinner, every weekend is here to remind you that you are different. So I started to think about that, and I started to wonder what's going to be my legacy, since most probably I'm not going to leave my DNA to the universe. What can I leave to the universe, or at least to my friends' kids? So I started to think about that, and it became a big life question for me. And at the same time, I already had been traveling a lot. I lived in Asia actually for many years. I wrote books about Asia. So when I was doing all these travels, I already had the feeling at that time, but it was a feeling. I think now we have facts, but at that time it was more like an intuition that our world, I could say the human world, was going through an amazing transition. Amazing by its scale and by its speed. And I thought at that time, this transition can be a huge opportunity or opportunities. And there are also big risks. And we can be on the right side of opportunities if we can understand, if we can understand this transition, if we have the right tools to act in this transition. And the opposite would be to get all the risks if we don't understand it and if we don't have the right tools. So I thought, look, Bruno, this is going to be your legacy. You need to understand what's happening to us and find the right tools so we can thrive in this new world. So I actually left my job. I was sales and marketing director in a very, very big international company. And I started to travel around the world, to meet people. My idea at that time was to meet the people who I hoped who could help me to understand this world, to understand this transition. So I met, I don't know, maybe now thousands of people, super rich people, super poor people, people in jail, artists, activists, politicians, special forces. When you work on about uncertainties, I've learned a lot from them, war journalists, etc., etc. And I started to read. I mean, I was reading already a lot, but I started to read even more. Now I read about like 100 books every year. And the more I was traveling, the more I was meeting with amazing people, the more I was reading, actually, the less it was making sense to me. Which sounds like almost like a joke, but it was not at that time. First, because I was feeling like a failure in my life. And when you think about it, it kind of makes sense, because the more I was exposing myself to the complexity of the world, the more I was discovering this complexity. So after a couple of years, I really started to ask myself, but does this whole thing make sense? I mean, I don't understand. And not only that, it was quite painful for me, not only because I couldn't find the answers to my questions, but also because through my travels, through my meeting, I could see that the world was suffering. I mean, I could meet like even super rich people who were suffering. We were like, I mean, their life was senseless and they knew it, or meaningless and they knew it. So I was really at the edge of stopping all this quest. And I remember one day I just arrived in Hong Kong. I knew Hong Kong very well at that time. I lived in Hong Kong before that. But I remember, because maybe of the jet lag and being tired by the flight, I was in. I just arrived in my hotel room, and like after like 10, 15 minutes, I was looking through the window and down the streets, and I was seeing all these people and like ants, you know, because I was very high in the building. And I'm like, what are they doing? I mean, are they just like going from one shopping mall to another shopping mall? I mean, it doesn't make any sense. I was like, this is just a mess. Life is a mess. My life is a mess. The world is a mess. It's all chaos. And when I heard me saying that, thinking that, I thought, wait. Is it chaos, like mess, like no order or even disorder? Mm-hmm. Or is it chaos? Could it be chaos like in science? Because I read a lot about science, philosophy, religion, spiritualities. And I've tried to read the latest on all these areas. And one of the latest in science is complexity theories and chaos theories. Mm. And I knew that if the world had actually become chaotic, then maybe I could find some hidden patterns. And I could find some tools from chaos theories. So basically, I went back home to my home in the middle of nowhere in the south of France. I did my homework. I read more and more about the subject. And then I came to the conclusion that, yes, our world has become more uncertain because it has become more chaotic in a scientific sense. Mm-hmm. And if we understand that, we can actually take advantage of that. We can actually thrive in uncertainty. We can actually benefit from all the crises that we are going through. So that's the beginning, I would say, of being like people call me a futurist monk, that yeah. is to say, traveling around the world. And then I started to write books. I wrote my last book about chaos, how we can take advantage of chaos. And now I'm trying to share my ideas. So once again, how can we thrive in this new world?
Yeah, that's a great story. I think mid-30s, a lot of people tend to hit that age. And if they're just in a dead-end job, if you like, or you know, just in the corporate world, they tend to find that, hit that brick wall. And they're like, where's my meaning and where's my purpose here?
Yeah, I'm noticing that I'm obviously older than you, and we used to talk about like midlife crisis, like in the 40s, but it's like, no, it's more like mid 30s. And I even see people around their 30, I mean, they're like 30 or even 28, 29 and even earlier. So it's like we are doing this midlife crisis earlier and earlier.
Yeah, I think that's probably technology and the amount of information that we can get at just a click of a finger now. I think that's probably accentuating it, to be fair. So you mentioned that you went traveling around the world. Was there an intention there, or did you just begin to travel in order to just start trying making sense of why you felt maybe a bit empty or something? Was there an actual intention or not?
My idea was to travel in order to meet people who were leaders in their field. Leaders doesn't mean anything. I mean, they were leaders for me. Like they were spiritual people or people in the TV business that I didn't know anything about it. So I was really looking in these people because I thought through some of them, looking at their life, listening to their life stories and listening to what was changing at that time. And I'm still doing the same. So what is changing in their life? So maybe it could make sense to me. Mm. And doing that, I think, as I said, the world is suffering. And it's very important to make sense out of this apparent chaos.
Yes. And with the amount of chaos going on, do you think that people's sense-making capabilities are diminishing the more complex that the world's getting?
I think more and more people feel lost. Now, as we are talking, it's a very special time because of the COVID crisis. But I think it started before. And I have the feeling that this COVID crisis, which started as a health crisis, I could say, which has become an economic crisis, which may be a social crisis, which is already social crisis in some places, like if we look at the US. I think it's a kind of an accelerating effect. There were many trends. So like to answer your question, I think people were already feeling lost without meaning in their life before. It's just now, because of this new crisis, it's like the people who were feeling a little bit lost, now they are feeling a lot more lost. And the people who, and there are many more people who were not feeling lost, who are starting to ask, okay, what's going on? Well, and parents were asking about their kids, their children, what to do with them, what to do about them. So I think it's things are some things, not everything are accelerating.
Something that I've sort of picked up is that the world has for decades now been very extroverted. It's very externally driven. Whereas since March in the UK in particular, everybody's had to stop and we've had to actually go inwards, which is okay if you've been meditating or whatever for a few years or whatever, but that's very foreign to a lot of people. They've never had to do it before. And I've noticed that that has actually, that slowing down has created quite, in my experience, quite a positive effect for people. So obviously based on their experience, that might come out as depression or something like that, because they don't know how to make sense of it. But to me, that's a step up, because otherwise they're just going to be on that rat race forever, aren't they?
Well, the thing is, when you don't have time to ask yourself questions, it's kind of comfortable in a way, But when you are stuck at home, it's more difficult not to face life questions. So I think, yeah, many people went through that stage and maybe even are still going through, through that stage. It's very important to for me to understand what's going on. Maybe I can give you a couple of ideas. I think, as I said, that this world has become chaotic even before this crisis, mostly, not only, but mostly for three reasons: numbers, connections, and speed. There have never been so many people on this planet. 150 years ago, there were approximately 1 billion people on this planet. Today, there are approximately 7.5, some people they say 8 billion. Let's say 8 billion people. So it's approximately 7 or 8 times more humans on this planet. And in 2-3 generations, in 150 years. And this is changing everything. Just imagine right now, there are only two of us talking to each other. But imagine there were like 16 of us talking to each other. That would be different. And I'm not saying this is better or this is worse. I'm just saying this is different. So the first thing that we have to understand, it's the increase of numbers. In chaos theories, you would talk about agents, increase of the number of agents. But let's talk about humans. The second thing is the connection. We have never been so connected to each other. Of course, we are thinking, when I say connected connection, we are thinking about digital connection. Since 2014, there are more mobile phones on this planet than humans. Obviously, some, they have 2 mobile phones or 3 mobile phones, but it doesn't change anything. It's like the order is absolutely amazing. More than half of the world population is connected to internet. So we are connected in the digital world, but not only that. We were, I would say, until March, connected in the real world. Because of this crisis, because we cannot travel anymore or not like before, we just realize how much we were traveling. I'm not saying everybody was traveling, but I'm saying that in the so-called developed world, our life has been changing so much. We are traveling to meet the other humans at the other side of the country, of our country, at the other side of the continent, at the other side of the world. This is changing many, many things. And last way that we are connected to each other is that we are living in big cities. More than half of the world population is living in big cities. And again, during this crisis, we have seen the difference. Like, I'm lucky enough that I was in Thailand for the winter when the crisis, the COVID crisis started. So I was lucky enough to fly back to my home, what I call my resilient home in the middle of nowhere in France. And obviously I could see the difference, like being surrounded by nature. You don't see that many people compared to be in a big city, even when everything stops. So numbers, there have never been so many people, and connection. We have never been so connected to each other. Only these two things could create what we call a chaotic stage or a chaotic phase. But it's not only that. Certain things, not everything, but certain things have been accelerating. You know, when I talk to my friends, like we have dinner, and I start to tell my stories, like the world is becoming more uncertain because it has become more chaotic. There is always one of my friends, especially older one, who, you think this time is amazing. You think that we are going through an amazing transition. You think this COVID crisis is amazing because this is your time, because this is your crisis. But our ancestors, people 200 years ago, 2000 years ago, they all also most probably felt the same, that they were going through an amazing time. And they are right. The people who say that, of course, our ancestors, our parents, grandparents, they went through amazing crises. I mean, wars, pandemic. I mean, amazing things. The difference, and this is huge, the difference between their crisis and our crisis is two words: scale and speed. No crisis has affected so many people at such a short time. And I would like to take two examples. First, I would say the human history or the human evolution. And the second evolution would be about the COVID crisis. The first one, if you look at humans, how we have evolved socially or in our main activity, we are used to say that first we started at hunters, gatherers. And basically, we were hunting, even before that, gathering fruits or whatever. And we, at that time, we were living in quite small tribes, 50 people, maybe a little more, 100, maybe sometime 150 people, but quite small group of people. We were nomadic. When there was nothing else to eat, but basically, we would go a little further and try to find food. When we changed from being hunters or gatherers to being farmers, basically, it changed everything. We stopped being nomadic. This is the beginning of the nation state. This is the beginning of the explosion of monotheist religion. Yes, it changed everything. This changed took 5,000, 10,000 years, depending on what you count. It took thousands of years. It took thousands of years. And very important, it didn't affect everybody at the same time. So thousands of years, and it didn't affect everybody at the same time. The next big revolution, I would say, in human history, it's when we move from being farmers or peasants to what we call the industrial revolution. Yeah. This changed everything again. Basically, we moved to big cities. It changed things, crazy things, like we started to get married by love. I mean, marrying somebody we love. I mean, before that, you just marry whoever you've been told to marry. So this changed everything again. This changed from the farmer's agricultural stage to the industrial stage. Took hundreds of years. So we are moving from thousands of years to hundreds of years. And once again, it didn't affect everybody at the same time. What we are going through now, moving to the, I don't know how to call it, the internet age, the digital age, the knowledge age, maybe one day the wisdom age, not yet, not yet. this is happening in what, 20 years, 15, 20, 30, I don't know, in decades. And not only it's happening in decades, but it's affecting, as we have seen before, almost everybody. And the fact that it's happening in decades compared to centuries or thousands of years is changing also a big thing. This is less than a lifetime. We don't have time to adapt.
Yeah.
So things are changing at a much larger scale and faster, I would say. And let's take the second example with the COVID crisis. Same. I mean, every day I have the comment or as a question, but Bruno, there have been health crises before, and they all talk about the Spanish flu and whatever before. And they are right. I mean, the Spanish flu, as far as we know, killed many, 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 many more people than the COVID. The big difference is, again, scale and speed. The scale, not of the number of deaths, but the scale of the impact on everybody's life. When most people on this planet started to be in some kind of lockdown, that was in March, early April 2020, at that time, approximately 100,000 people died, which is nothing compared to the Spanish flu. But this is my point. 100,000 people death triggered within a couple of weeks something that impacted half of the world population. At that time, late March, early April, approximately 4 billion people were in some kind of lockdown. So what I'm saying is, such a small event, so I feel bad to say that about all the people suffering and losing loved ones. But what I'm saying is, a quite small event, 100,000 people dying, triggered half of the world population, a big change in their life. So this is what we are seeing now. Small events are triggering amazing thing. And this is what we call the butterfly effect in chaos theories. Small events, huge effect.
Right, okay. So are you saying that the systems that have got us here now are not going to be able to take us forward?
The two questions people ask me the most in the past weeks are, is it going to get back to normal, meaning like before? This is the first question. And the second question is it going to be better after? The first question is, is it going to go back to normal, like before? And my answer is no. No, in a way that it's already changed. It's already changed too much. Like we had the way we are looking at each other, the way we are hugging each other or not, the way we are touching each other or not, has already changed. Of course, in 1 year, I hope it will be somehow different compared to today. But I mean, working from home, there are so many, from some people, they will just go back to their office or their factory as before. But obviously, 10, maybe 15, maybe 20, who knows, maybe 25% more in certain industry, typically IT industry, the more will not go back to normal. And this is going to change everything. The commercial real estate, the collective food industry. I mean, there are so many things that will change. So, no, my belief, which is actually not a belief, but I think is a fact I just observe, is that no, things are not going to go back as before. whether you call it normal. I don't like to call it normal, but I don't believe before was that normal. Seeing so much suffering in the world. So is it going to get better? That's my life mission. How can we make it better? It was my life mission before the COVID, and it's even more today. Why more? Because I feel it's easier to convince most people now that we are going through an amazing transition. If I compare to 6 months ago, I would have to tell people about my hunters and my farmers and my industrial revolution. And I still have to, I just did. But now I think people sense in their heart, not that much in their mind, but in their heart, that, okay, this is something big. This is something big. And the question is, what's next? And according to, to make it simple, according to chaos theories, a system, what is a system? I mean, a system is a couple of things interacting with each other. So you are a system, your body is a system, your family is a system. If you are working in a company, this is a system. UK is a system, France is a system, and humankind is a system. So a system can have different stages. Really, this is very simple. It's like water. Water can be in different phases or different stages. Yeah. Water can be liquid, water can be solid like ice, and water can be a gas. A system, again, things interacting with each other, can also have different stages. The first stages is to be balanced, equilibrium, nothing is moving. Then, like, maybe you are quite balanced on a chair right now. And if somebody comes and pushes you, you're going to oscillate because you're going to resist because you don't want to fall from your chair. Basically, it's like a thermostat or like a swing. If you push the swing will oscillate not too far from the equilibrium point. The thermostat, let's say this is summer, it's a bit hot. If it's too hot, the thermostat will trigger AC and the temperature will go down. When it's too cold, the thermostat will stop AC and the temperature will go up and on and on and on. The temperature will oscillate. This is what we call a linear system. You don't have to remember the linear word. What is important is to understand that these systems, once you have understood them, then you can control them. And you can, you know what's happening next. It's very, very easy. And basically, this is what we have learned at school. I mean, at very, very early age. You don't have to be an engineer or scientist. Mm. You learn that when you're very young. So this is what we call a linear system. Once you have understood it, you can predict it and you can control it. What we learn from chaos theories is that at a certain point, which is called the tipping point, the system can go out of control. And at that time, you will see what is called self-amplification. Let's get the thermostat again. The thermostat is broken after the tipping point. It's actually even totally crazy. What's happening? If it's too hot, the thermostat will trigger AC, and then after a while, it becomes too cold. And then what the thermostat will do, it will trigger even more AC. And it's even colder, even more AC. The colder, the colder. Mm. It would work on at the opposite, the warmer, the warmer. Because there are so many people on this planet, because we are so connected, because certain things are going too fast, so the system doesn't have time to go back to the equilibrium point, we can see many examples of self-amplification. Like I can say, the more people on Facebook, the more people on Facebook. The more people on TikTok, the more people on TikTok. If there are only the two of us on TikTok or Instagram, nobody cares. Maybe our friends will join. But if there are more than 2,000 people on Facebook, almost 1 billion people already on TikTok, the more people on Facebook, the more people on Facebook. Mm. And there are many, many examples like this. The one that we are living now is the one I just mentioned before. 100,000 people dead on this planet triggered half of the world population impacted. The triggered an economic crisis, which again have triggered a social crisis. In the past, we used to have cyclical crisis. I'm not an economist, but it's like the financial bubble. Mm. It goes up, down, up, explodes, down, up. It's cyclical. Now, after the tipping point, we can see new, there are still cyclical crises, but now we have a new kind of crisis, which is called systemic crisis or global crisis. Already in 2008, the financial crisis triggered an economic crisis, which triggered a social crisis. And now again, 10 years later, a little more, we have this health crisis triggering an economic crisis, which may trigger a financial crisis, which and over and over and over. So small things can trigger, but this self-amplification effect, much, much bigger thing, the butterfly effect. And this is where we are. So the question, to go back to the question, is it going to be better or worse after that? It's to understand that according to chaos theories, once we have passed the tipping point, we cannot go back to the previous situation. We cannot. It's just scientifically impossible. Only two things can happen: bad news and good news. The bad news, the system can collapse. And it's like if you don't take care of your house or of your flat, of any building, it will collapse. This is the second principle of thermodynamics. If you don't take care of something, slowly it will decay and maybe collapse. Not only buildings can collapse, civilizations can collapse. There are many civilizations, as far as we know, that have already collapsed. The first city in the world, in human history, that reached a population of 1 million people is Rome in Italy. And 1 million people, I mean, I'm not saying this is good or bad to put 1 million people in one city. I'm saying this is a good indicator of the level of complexity. You need to be able to feed 1 million people, to get water for them, transport them, etc. When Rome collapsed, 450, within 30 years, it collapsed. The population in Rome collapsed from 1 million people to approximately 30,000 people. 30 years, 1 million, 30,000. Wow. The big thing for us today to understand is that at that time, it took 30 years. It took 30 years. And it was quite local. The Roman Empire was very big, but I can't believe it didn't affect that much the Chinese at that time. Now, and this is very, very bad news. This is one of the reasons I'm waking up every morning and I'm trying to convince everybody. I think this is where we are. And we are on this edge of a possible collapse. And I believe that today, because there are so many of us and because we are so connected, it's not going to take 30 years and it's not going to stay local. So that was the bad news. The good news is, according to chaos theories, again, after the tipping point, you have these self-amplification stages, what we call in day-to-day language crisis, many, many crises and crises getting worse and worse, self-amplifying. After that stage, you can either have a collapse or a breakthrough, an emergence. So basically, what chaos theories are telling us is, if I'm right, if we are in this chaotic phase, that, and I'm saying that we are because of all these self-amplification examples that I can see. Then next stage is either a collapse of our civilizations, that's what I'm afraid of, or an amazing breakthrough. Amazing breakthrough in our personal lives, in our communities, and even for humankind. So basically, according to chaos theories, the whole thing can collapse, or we can lift all together, maybe 8 billion people, maybe more, maybe 10 billion people in harmony, with our kids having enough healthy food, very good quality food, access to a good healthcare for free. When I start to say that, many people tell me, oh, Bruno, you're just a dreamer. Which is fine. Maybe I'll tell you later, but I think we need to be dreamers these days. I think this is very, very important that we find new narratives. So again, I'm very happy to be called a dreamer. And my point is, we are the result of this breakthrough. It's not only a dream. From atoms to molecules, from molecules to living cells to organisms, to living beings, to maybe the humans, we have gone through all these different breakthroughs, from atoms to human beings. And collectively, this is the same, going through from tribes to millions of people, nations. I think next stage is, can we live all together on this planet? Can we find the next level of complexity so we can live together? So that was a very long answer. And nice. To make it short, yes, I think things can be better. They can also get worse. They can be better if we understand what's happening to us. And because this is a chaotic times, because of this butterfly effect, I can even say that decisions that we are making now will influence the next decade, I believe. So this is why this is so important, because of the butterfly effect.
That's a great answer. Absolutely great answer. So what do you, is there any systems in specifically that you think we need to implement right now to help us move forward into that, the positive side of that?
We need big things and small things. We need one big thing, which is a dream. We need to, most people, I tell them, look, this is like being in a storm on a small boat. If you don't dream of getting somewhere, you know, the linear time, you remember the system used to be linear, close to equilibrium, close to balance. This is the time of like railways. The if you take a train, you know, there are not that many uncertainty. Okay, there can be a strike, there can be a mechanical incident, but most of the time you take the train, you don't have, besides paying your ticket, you don't have anything to do, and you can sleep, you can work, you will reach home. Not much uncertainty and not much freedom. I mean, you cannot change your mind in the middle of the trip. You cannot go and ask the train master, okay, I changed my mind, can we just go to another city? But say, no, I mean, stop, next stop, and take another train. I cannot change. Now it's more like being on a boat. It's more like being on a boat, and if you are on a boat, the first thing you need to, at every moment, to think about where do you want to go. You have to check that everybody wants to go in the same direction. So my first advice is, have a dream. And it doesn't have to be realistic. Where do you want to go in 1 year? Where do you want to be in 1 year? Where do you want to be in 10 years, 20 years? I don't know, like long, long time in advance. And this dream is going to be what we call a strange attractor in chaos theories. Let me explain very briefly. A strange attractor, this is a real scientific name. I love it because for me it sounds very poetic. A strange attractor. It's strange and it's an attractor. The in life you have disorder. You have randomness. In randomness, you cannot predict anything. There may be some statistics applying, but generally speaking, you cannot predict precisely when it's random. And then you have order, linear system. When you have understood the system, you can predict and control it. Order, you can predict and control. Disorder, you cannot predict, you cannot control. Chaos, the stage of chaos, chaotic system, is different. It's not order, it's not randomness. It's something else. That is to say, when it's a chaotic system, a chaotic stage, you cannot predict precisely, and at the same time, not everything can happen. I repeat because it's a bit complicated and a bit mind-blowing, this part. Order, you can predict. Disorder, you cannot predict. And you cannot control. Order, you cannot predict, like disorder, but a little bit like order, it doesn't do anything. It follows a hidden pattern. And this hidden pattern is the strange attractor. So what I'm saying is that if you understand that, you can make a strange attractor. I cannot predict what's going to happen to you. I wish I could. I wish I could, but I cannot for you or for anybody else. If anybody tells you, look, I know what's going to happen to us, don't listen to them. They are either crazy or charlatans. most probably the second.
Charlatan, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So don't listen to them. As a futurist, I can tell you two things. I don't know what's going to happen, and you never had so much power to decide what you want to happen in your life, what you want your life to be. You never had so much power. So have a dream. It doesn't have to be realistic. It doesn't have to be like an objective, like when you work in a company. No, no, it can be totally unrealistic. Let me take you another metaphor. It's like, I don't know if you have ever ride a bicycle or a motorbike in sand. When you're riding on the sand, if you don't know what's happening, you just try. It's becoming very, very unstable. You focus on the bike, and then you start to amplify whatever you're doing, and then you collapse. This is like a real collapse. And the secret, and I'm sure all of you who have ever tried it, the secret is to look ahead, to have like a fixed point ahead of where you want to go. So what I'm saying, the strange attractor is doing the same. It's a little bit like magic, but I'm sure if you try it on a bicycle, you will also find it's magic. So have a dream. And I would even push that a little further. Once you have a dream, repeat it every day. Read it. Actually, don't read it. Visualize it. Like if it was already happening. I don't know. If you are dreaming to in 1 year to be in a nice small island with a very warm weather, just visualize it. Feel the warm weather on your skin. Feel seeing the pleasure of looking at the sea, of the small hills, or whatever. And this leads me to the second part. First part, first gift from chaos theories, have your own, create your own strange attractor. Otherwise, you will be like the bicycle in the sand and you will fall, or you will be like the small boat in the middle of the sea, not without anybody knowing where they want to go. They will be like in the middle of a storm and they will never get out of the storm. And this leads me to the second practical thing that you do, which is linked to the butterfly effect. Change small things in your life. And I'm used to saying 5 minutes per day can change your life in a significant way. 15 minutes per day will change your life in a very radical day. Have small habits. Have small routines. The first one, my advice, is to visualize your dream, to visualize your strange attractor. How is it going to work? Well, I'm not sure. Maybe if you believe in God, God will just fulfill your prayers. If you believe in the laws of attraction, maybe the universe will provide. And if you believe in chaos theories, and you can believe the three of them, that's fine. If you believe in chaos theories, because you are reading, visualizing, even better, your dream every morning, which takes like 30 seconds or 1 minute, not more. Many, many small decisions, I call them micro decisions, mostly unconscious decisions. Am I eating with this friend or with this other friend? I am going to do this or am I going to do that? Very small, small, small decision that you're making during the day will be unconsciously aligned with your dream. And not only there will be that will be aligned with your dream, but let's say I eat with this friend instead of this friend. The possibilities will be different. So he will tell me, okay, maybe you should meet this person. So everything is not only aligned, but that may be, in certain cases, also self-amplifying, helping you to reach your dream. Hmm. But my advice is also to have like some other routines. I had many journalists calling me at the beginning of the COVID crisis and asking me what to do. And basically, I was telling them, look, have a strange attractor. Where do you want to be after this crisis? Where do you want to be in 1 month? Where do you want to be in 3 months? Because I knew if they don't have this fixed point, they will fall, they will collapse on their motorbike or mm-hmm. bicycle. And the second thing is go back to basics. Have small routines, rituals. That's my 5 minutes per day. Maybe meditate. 5 minutes is short, but it's better than nothing. And do it every day. Meditate. Two rituals that I can share with you. And these two changed my life. So just try them if you want. The first one is the gratitude. The small gratitude workshop. 1 minute every day. 1 minute every day, I ask myself, I try to find 3 things or 3 people or 3 events that I feel gratitude for. Just by doing that, there are many studies about that. You can Google it. It's proven that the way you feel about yourself, the level of happiness about your life is changing positively, dramatically within a week. Mm-hmm. So I'm saying, look, just to repeat 1 thing, 1 minute or 30 seconds per day is going to change my life in 1 week. I'm going to try it.
Yeah.
And remember the butterfly effect, because you are going to do this. If you do it in the evening, which is better for me, it's difficult. So I do my routine in the morning. But if you do it in the evening, you are going to sleep better because you'll feel better. Even on a very, very bad day, most likely you will find 3 good things. So you thought like, okay, what a shitty day. But even in a very, very shitty day, you'll find some things good that has actually happened to you. The gratitude. My second thing, and if you have to try 3 rituals, 5 minutes, I would tell you, find a dream and visualize it every day. Do the gratitude exercise. 3 things, 3 events, 3 people that you feel gratitude for. You can write it or not. It's not that important. And the third one is forgiveness. Try to find 1 thing, not 3. One is enough. 1 thing that you want to forgive. 1 person that you want to forgive. And that can include yourself.
Yeah.
Like many times that include myself. Like I'm quite sure when I do my forgiveness exercise tonight, I will say, oh shit, my French accent was so terrible with Alex. Nobody's going to understand me. And I will say, no, that's fine. Don't worry. Forgive yourself. So again, to thrive in this new world, in this chaotic stage, not only to be more resilient during this chaotic stage with all these crises that we are going through, but more important, to try to be more on the emergence side, more on the breakthrough and avoid the collapse, the breakdown side, a dream, build yourself a strange attractor. This dream can change. I mean, you can change your dream tomorrow if you want. Or the day after tomorrow. What is important is to have one. Mm-hmm. Is to have one. And one more thing about the dream. 50 years ago, if your parents were farmers in the south of France, statistically, you would become a farmer. Of course, some people would go to another big cities or go to another continent. But for most people, statistically, they didn't need a dream. They could have one. It was a nice thing to have, but it was not a must. Today, what are we going to do? What are what our kids are going to do in 20 years, we have absolutely no idea. Today, to have a dream, because this is a chaotic time, is a must. And I would even add, to be a little more provocative, that if you don't have a dream, somebody else is going to have one for you. Mm. One day you're going to wake up and realize, I'm not sure this is my dream. And it may be Mark Zuckerberg's dream or Elon Musk's dream. But somebody has a dream. Have a dream. And second thing, have a small set of routines. Start with 5 minutes per day. And maybe you can extend it, like adding a little bit of meditation, adding maybe 10 minutes of reading every day. The first three, visualize your dream, your strange attractor every day. Maybe you can try the gratitude, three things, three people you feel gratitude for, and forgiveness. What or who can you forgive every day?
Wow, yeah. Beautiful. Let me tell you what I find intriguing. And by the way, before I go on, actually, no, your English is very good. You don't have to worry about that.
Thank you.
But what I find intriguing is that we were talking about, like, you know, global change and how the globe is shifting right now. But when you mention the three things, it's all as on an individual, personal level.
Right. Very good point. But basically, what I've said for an individual is true for your family, is true for your couple, is true for a bigger community, it's true for a company. Let me give you a couple examples. I think we need a new dream. And you know, I think in the past decades, utopia has become a very, very bad word. Rightly, I would say, because the previous utopia, whether communism, socialism, and I would even add capitalism, now we are realizing it doesn't work that much. But I'm not talking about this one utopia good for everybody. No, I'm talking about utopia for each communities and each families. We need to have one. And yes, we may need new narratives, but with an S. We need new dreams even as a humankind level. What's the future of UK? What's the future of France? You know, we are very small in this world. How can we contribute? What can we, from our different cultures or different languages or different history, how can we contribute to a global dream? As I said before, we moved from being tribes people, 50, 150 people, nation people. How can we reach the next stage? This is the first time with the COVID that we are consciously fighting the same virus. They were not aware during the Spanish flu that they were fighting the same disease at that time. This is the first time. Well, obviously now we are not really fighting it together as a humankind. It's more like everybody wants the vaccine first, or to be more this or like that. But and still, this is a negative sign. But I'm also seeing some positive signs. So how are we going to have a common narrative? So collectively, globally, what we need is same, a strange attractor. How do we want to live together on this planet? And it doesn't have to be one answer for everybody. No. There can be different dreams. But each of us, we need to have a dream. What does it mean for each of us with our very different backgrounds, different level of economic development? How can we live all together? And the second thing is, same, rituals and routines. I always tell people, maybe to change the world, you need to start to say good morning to your neighbors every day. And it sounds ridiculous, but it's not, because of the butterfly effect. And by the way, during the COVID, many people started, especially in big cities, many people started to discover that they have neighbors and they can talk to each other. I was in New York just 3 weeks after September 11th. And I remember I was actually invited to one of my best friend's wedding on September 14th, 3 days later. But obviously, all flights were canceled, so the wedding was postponed for 3 weeks. And I remember when I was in New York, and I already knew New York quite well at that time, the most amazing thing is that people started to talk to their neighbors. Not only they started to talk to their neighbors, but they started to help each other, which was for typical New Yorkers, which I think is very comparable for Parisians, and I would suspect to a certain extent for people living in London. This changed everything. And very recently, like a year last year, and I was with my friend, her name is Dania, and I asked her, Dania, you remember, I was shocked by that. What would you say 20 years later? I mean, did it just go back to the previous situation, or people are still talking to each other and helping each other? And she started to think and said, well, Bruno, I'm not sure, but from my own experience, obviously, it's not as it was weeks after September 11th. Mm. And I'm quite convinced that it's not as before. So it has come back, receded, I would say, a little bit. And still, it has progressed. So I really believe that we are going to change the world, not with a new something-ism, not with a new big idea that we should apply to everybody. We are going to change the world with very small things. A big dream that doesn't need to be the same for everybody, and small things. Say hello, be gentle, save energy, take care of your kids if you have kids. I mean, small things, very, very small things. It's a little bit like another back to basics.
And what human beings do you think are on the planet at the moment that seem to be like at the forefront? Would you consider people like Elon Musk?
It's not exactly your question, but it's very similar. So, sometimes maybe you are trying to be polite, but sometimes people ask me, okay, Bruno, so what do you think? Is this going to collapse, or is this going to are we going to see a new world, an emergence? Mm. Well, you know, I have bad days and I have good days. So on good days, I'm like, which doesn't happen that much. I'm like, okay, everybody is going to wake up one day, and we are all going to realize that we are small humans living on this small planet in the middle, and we are all going to love each other. Okay, this is not happening every day. Okay. And then I have bad days, and I'm like, okay, this is just too late. One of my main concern is climate change, for instance. Maybe we are too far already in this self-amplification stages. So I have good days and I have bad days. And most of the days, I would say I'm in between, and I'm asking myself, what is the level of suffering that we need to go through to realize that we have only one planet? Mm. And this is why I'm optimistic, because even if we see all these bad things happening right now about the COVID, these selfish behaviors, we can see also, I've read that during the beginning of the crisis in UK, there have never been so many volunteers who say, look, I'm here to help. And this has been seen in other countries, the same has happened in France. So it's like you see very selfish behaviors. And by the way, newspapers, medias, especially social medias, are only or mostly talking about the bad behaviors. I see also very, very good behavior. I mean, good. I'm not here to judge, but I mean, not selfish behaviors, collective, positive behaviors. So I'm wondering, what is the level of suffering? I think this crisis may help us to realize that we are one species on this planet, and we need to fight together whatever happens to us. So I don't know what Elon Musk would say to answer your question. I think he's a great dreamer. I love that part. Obviously only a dreamer. He's an amazing achiever.
I do question why we are sending people to the Mars and the moon again and whatever when we can't fix what's going on.
I have one of my things that I repeat every day in my ritual is, I don't think or I try to think and. I think or is something from the past. It's hot or cold. And then the thermostat will decide what to do. No, I would say it's cold and warm at the same time. So going so fast from one to the other that it's almost the same. So I think you're right. In some, why spend so much money to go to another planet when we cannot fix our planet? Mm-hmm. And when I start to think that, I think, well, let's do both. Let's do both. And if Elon Musk, who obviously has enough money to do one thing, maybe if I knew him, I don't. I would tell, what about the other part? What about saving this planet? And by the way, I think he's trying his best. I don't like everything about Elon Musk. Mm. There are many things I don't like. But what I'm saying is going to Mars, what I love, it was like going to the moon. I love the poetic part of it. I love the collective poetic part of it. So personally, I would say, well, you want to go to spend a couple of billions. Obviously, you have more than you need. Why not? Go ahead. And I will talk to you or to other people. Okay, what can we do? But again, I think it's a very good mindset switch to not only think or... and to think more and more and
yeah,
things and that there are many people I would say let's not do things at the global level, we only to do things at a small level, and some people will tell you exactly the opposite. My answer is let's do both. And if you like to do it small, do it small. If you like to do it big, but I love to do both.
Yeah, it's a fair point. I think I hear that a lot about you know, the spending that, for example, the military spend what, a couple of trillion a year or whatever on going to war. Let's put that money into infrastructure, into Africa, and let's drag 2 billion people out of poverty.
Yeah, I must admit, I didn't find the good point of spending so much money on the military. If there is one, but this is again, this is from the past. This is from the, I guess, when we were hunters-gatherers, we would spend of arrows and rocks or whatever. And then now we are spending on, I don't know, I hope this will change. I hope. Yeah, and again, I'm not only hoping, I'm trying to do my little share. And everybody can do a very little share.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to hear your opinion on the future of the, particularly in the West, the economy and where you think that's going.
Again, I just told you, don't believe any futurist telling you what's going to happen. What I think is, and I don't need to be a futurist or an economist to say that. I think everybody slightly aware of our world could say that our present system cannot go forward. The economic system is based on unlimited resources. I hope most people have understood that we don't have unlimited resources. We have a very limited planet. So I think my hope is that things will change with people trying many things. And there are already many people trying new ways of living, or new ways of working, new ways of making some kind of wealth. I didn't say money on purpose. I mean, you can have wealth without having money. I mean, you can be very happy and in the middle of nowhere and eating your own vegetables like I'm doing here. So my view on the future of this present system is that it will collapse. Using the same word I've used before, it will collapse. Maybe not in one event. It may take several events. And at the same time, I see many breakthrough. I see many new economic system, people living in a different way, with different kind of money, free money, alternative money. I mean, doing different. I mean, I don't really, when I talk to younger people, are they going to work like their parents?
No, probably not.
I think there is absolutely no way. So there is absolutely no way. So I think the system will change. Again, don't listen to me when I'm talking about the future. It's just my opinion. It's not a fact. It will change. And my hope is that we don't have, again, to suffer too much. Because when I said the economic system will collapse, I'm also saying that many people working in the present system will suffer. And I don't want that. So the question is, are we going to be smart enough to make enough breakthrough and many new small systems so people can find their life in the new system? This I don't know.
And I think you mentioned young people there. I think that there's a lot of hype at the moment around cryptocurrency and decentralized money, decentralized finance. Do you think that it looks like it's going to happen, that move away from centralized money and centralized everything, to be honest? Do you think that's a benefit?
Oh, yeah. For me, there is... there are three things that we can learn from chaos theories: strange actuator, have a dream, rituals, the 5 minutes that will trigger huge effect in your life and I hope for, in your community, the butterfly effect. And the third big thing that we can learn, it's fractal images. And I don't know how everybody is familiar with the fractal. The best way is just to Google fractal images. But to make simple, it's an image that looks approximately the same, whatever the scale.
Yeah.
So the what I see is a fractal breakthrough. It's like, and this is decentralized. That is absolutely decentralized. This is why I'm 50 years ago, there were two systems, communist or capitalist. No, I don't believe in that now. I think that there will be many new systems. Like maybe you want to live with 50 people and all the kids together, or maybe it sounds like a total nightmare for you, and you won't have your independence and still have friends, but not so close. I mean, everybody is going to find their way to live happily, I hope. And that includes the wealth part, which is to the money. So, I do believe in decentralized money, decentralized way of living, decentralized democracies. Our democracies, that's another subject. Obviously, our democracies are not working. People are not voting anymore. And if they are, the result can be disappointing for people loving freedom like me. So this is going to be decentralized, if you ask me.
Right. Okay. What do you do now in regards to like working with organizations and working with people? Do you coach them? What's your actual role now?
There are like two parts in my life. I think it's about 50-50 of my time, 50% of my time. It's one part is basically this is my futurist monk. This is the monk part. I read, I travel, or I used to travel before the COVID crisis. And I meditate every day. I read, I told you, 100 books per day. I meet people now virtually. So this is my like research time. I almost said this is my favorite time, but actually no, it's not true. But I love it so much. And the other, and this is the 50% that doesn't bring me any wealth directly. Yeah. So basically, I spend money. I don't make money on that part. And the second part is the part that this is more like the futurist part. I share. I try to share my message, and this is where I make money, so I can sustain my life and my small family. So this part basically, I share my my tools, my views in three ways. I do talks, keynotes. I used to do keynotes until March because this is a business, an industry that has been totally impacted and is now like a living dead industry. And I love it. But I do believe it will come back. I have no idea if it's coming back in 3 months, in 1 year, or in 3 years. But I do believe people will still love to gather together and listen to somebody talking to them live, not behind the screen, about the future. So I think, we used to do that around the fireplace thousands of years ago. So this is one part, which used to be my biggest part of for my income, not anymore. The second part, I do seminars. So basically I coach teams or executives. And this used to be approximately 10-15%. This used to be 70% keynotes, 15% smaller seminars, which now I do in real life, meeting people, and also in webinars, which I was already doing before. And the last part is mentoring. I found that at the mentoring, it's like a one-to-one, and it's not coaching. Basically, I help people, mostly people who are asking themselves, like, look, what do I want? I'm 30 years old, or I'm 40 years old, I'm 15 years old, sometimes 60, this is the oldest. And what do I do? What do I want to do with the rest of my life? Whether I'm 30 years old or 60 years old, what do I want to do with the rest of my life? And they love my life. They love what I'm doing, what I have achieved. It's not like they want to do the same, but they like the idea of my freedom. So do I do like mentoring sessions with them?
Beautiful. So we've been gone for over an hour now. Where can people find you or get in touch with you?
The best for me, they can reach me, reach my ideas on my website, brunomarion.com. Brunomarion, maybe you can put the link, .com.
Yes, sure.
And they will see my videos, my article, my post about the present crisis. And they can subscribe to my list. And of course, they can write to me as well.
Beautiful. Bruno, I've really enjoyed talking to you. Would you be happy to come back on at some point?
Yes, of course.
Beautiful. I've really enjoyed it. Thank you very much for coming on.
Thanks for your trust. Thanks for listening. Thank you very much.
Cheers, Bruno.
Cheers.